Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We heard it from the Rolling Stones, what a drag it is getting old. But it doesn't have to be. This weekend, San Antonio will host a global conference on anti-aging. And we're joined by Rochelle Buffenstein. She's the president of the American Aging Association and the president-elect. Jim Nelson is of the American Aging Association. They're going to be having a conference at the Western Riverwalk Hotel from experts from around the planet talking about how science and policy can create a path to healthier aging. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Rochelle, I've interviewed you before, and I've gone down to the Barshop Institute, which is part of the UT Health Science Center, and you've had this massive zoo of we were just talking about the world's largest colony of bats. You've got the world's largest colony of naked mole rats right here in San Antonio. Why?
Naked mole rats are really interesting animals in that they live an extraordinary long length of time and they don't get cancer. In fact, they don't seem to show any of the normal age-associated diseases like neurodegeneration, heart disease, and in particular, we've never seen even one case of a spontaneous tumor occurring. So if we could figure out how the naked mole rats can overcome the aging process, we might get some insights that could be used for interventions for human aging or to delay the process in humans.
So the naked mole rat, and they're furless. They live underground in these burrows and these kind of like hives, right?
Yeah, the naked mole rats live almost like bees. There's a single female that does the task of breeding, and then they're workers and soldiers, and they have a real community of animals. They're also very hygienic in this colony, which I think is another key component of their longevity.
So that they take a lot of showers or baths, or what do you mean?
They have a latrine where they do all their business, and depending on where they are in the social hierarchy, they either do their ablutions at the back or in the doorway. And if they're the riffraff, they spend all day cleaning the toilets for their fellow mole rats to use.
Right, but so when you say they live a long lifespan compared to just a regular rat?
Yeah, compared to they're the size of a mouse. And compared to a mouse, they live 32 years, whereas a mouse makes it to 4 years, and that's really a very rare event. So for their body size, they should live about 5 or 6 years, and they live 32, which is incredible. Humans are another very long-lived species. We also live about 5 times longer than is predicted on the basis of our species average mass.
Right, because there seems to be this average or whatever. You look at a mammals and their mass, and the bigger they are, the longer they generally live. Like an elephant will live a lot longer than a dog.
Correct.
And why is that?
Scaling seems to be a natural phenomenon in every aspect of biology. So the bigger you are, the bigger your brain, the bigger your bones, the bigger your eye. That makes sense because you need to have that kind of size to be in proportion. But what is less well known is that the bigger you are, the slower your heart rate, the slower the number of breaths you take per minute, and every aspect of your biology, including the platelet clotting density, depends on the size, the average size of the species.
And when you have a gigantic size, like an elephant or a rhino or something, is the cell, individual cells, are they larger or are they just more of them than a dog or a cat?
They're just more of them, but they function at a much slower pace than that of a dog or a rat.
Okay. And so you're looking at the naked mole rat, you're doing comparative biology, are you like looking into their DNA and seeing what is it about their DNA that's so different, or maybe there's a clue here?
Yeah, we've recently published the genome of the naked mole rat, and we're hoping that we'll get some really good insights about what's different in terms of their genes. So far, we know that their genome is almost identical to that of a human. In fact, it seems more closely related to that of a human than to mice and rats, which was quite intriguing, seeing mice and rats are their cousins. So we think that there might be a few longevity genes in those unique families that are only shared between humans and naked mole rats. So the genome is one aspect of our study. Most of our work concerns the molecular physiology, trying to develop ideas based on what's really already known in terms of cancer resistance and those kind of things, and then just seeking those topics in depth in naked mole rats.
And so are the naked mole rats, are they just better at healing themselves? And like you said, talk about hygiene and cleaning the nest, but maybe they're also very good at doing that at the cellular level as well.
Absolutely. So what we've seen with the naked mole rat in particular is that they're very resistant to whatever toxin you throw their way. Many years ago, we irradiated a bunch of animals with a very high dose of irradiation, and they're still alive, and they don't seem to be any the worse for it. We've also treated them with various kinds of toxins, and they just are totally resilient. It's as though they never got the damage at all. We've noticed they also have much better repair processes, so almost instantaneously on getting some kind of damage, they're already activating repair pathways. In contrast, mice seem to ignore the fact they've been damaged until really late, 6 or 7 months later, before they activate the pathways that the mole rats were activating within 2 to 4 hours.
Now, there have been people who said that, you know, the body kind of goes through two different stages, that there's a growth stage where you do a lot of cell development, and then there's the maintenance stage where it does all the cleaning and trying to go back and heal things. So are they just better at that healing stage? And is that something that, I don't know, Jim, let's get you in on this, because your area seems to be caloric restriction. Jim Nelson, and you're the president-elect of the American Aging Association. And a lot of people have said, you know, I don't know if it's hopeful thinking or not, but by going into caloric restriction, eating a lot less, that you drive your body into that healing phase, that would be something that the naked mole rats seem to do all the time.
Well, we have evidence that the calorically restricted mouse, which as Shelley pointed out is much shorter lived, benefits from this caloric restriction by doing some of the same things that the naked mole rat does naturally in terms of repair mechanisms. It's much more resistant, the calorie restricted mouse is much more resistant to toxins, for example, to DNA damage. So there are many things that lead us to believe that what Shelley's discovering occurs naturally with a naked mole rat can be achieved by manipulations, environmental manipulations like caloric restriction, or also drugs in a shorter-lived species like a mouse.
Yeah, because that's the ideal, because it's really hard to get those benefits. If to go into caloric restriction, it's a miserable way to live, I imagine.
Well, yes, for most of us, it's not our ideal based on, you know, everyone's experience.
I mean, you eat a handful
dieting.
Of rice, that's your how much you get or whatever. I heard that the banquet where they talk about this stuff is not very good.
Yes, I've actually been part of one of those, they call them the cronies, the calorie restriction society people who actually calorically restrict themselves, and their banquets are less than fun.
All right, so we're going to talk about that, but it's interesting that there are people who are trying to apply this already to their lives, and it gives you people who are willing to become participants, in an unauthorized study, but that's something to look at. If you got a question or a comment about anti-aging, some of the science that's going into this, a path to healthier aging that we're having, San Antonio is the site of a global conference this weekend. Some of it's going to be open to the public. It's going to be at the Western Riverwalk Hotel. We're going to talk more about that. But if you got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back.
From the KSTX Community Events Calendar, the Emily Ann Theater and Gardens in Wimberley presents Disney's Beauty and the Beast, Fridays and Saturdays through June 28th. The Free San Antonio Summer Art and Jazz Festival is Friday through Sunday at Crockett Park. And the Playhouse San Antonio's production of Dead Man's Cell Phone continues with shows Friday and Saturday at 8 and a final performance Sunday at 3. Find details on these events and more at tpr.org. The Community Events Calendar is a public service of KSTX. Here's a win-win. You can donate your car to support KSTX. Get free towing and a tax deduction. Find out more about vehicle donations at tpr.org.
This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. This weekend at the Western Riverwalk Hotel, there is a global conference looking at science and policy as a path to healthier aging and age extension. And we've got in the studio to talk about that Rochelle Buffenstein. She's the president of the American Aging Association and also the president-elect Jim Nelson of the American Aging Association. They're part of the Barshop Institute, which is a component of the UT Health Science Center. We've got some world-class research going into anti-aging or increasing health span happening here in San Antonio. And when we were went to break, remind our listeners, our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. When we went to break, we were talking about caloric restriction. So, Jim, tell me more, like define what caloric restriction is. How restricted is it?
That's a great question. We've found, and other people have found in who've studied this, that anything between cutting back 10% to as much as 50% of the amount of food that the animal would like to eat has positive effects generally, usually. So we don't know how this translates to humans in terms of positive effects and so on, but basically the general finding has been the more the animal is restricted down to 50%, the longer it lives.
And it may not have direct, obviously, implications just yet, but it'll save you money at the grocery store. And so that helps. But the key for scientists is not necessarily trying to convince people to do that or look at the what would it be, is to find what's happening on the inside on the molecular level. So if there could be a drug or a treatment that could duplicate that benefit.
Exactly. And so this is what scientists have been looking for a long time. What is different molecularly speaking, endocrinologically speaking, hormones, how are the hormones changed in these animals that plausibly could explain why they are able to live longer, why they're able to withstand toxic stresses.
So, Rochelle, you mentioned earlier before we started the program about the turtle papers. Tell me about the turtle papers. What's that?
Okay, we have at this meeting a speaker from Canada called Ken Story, who's done some incredible work looking at why turtles are able to live such incredibly long lifespans. And he's also looked at hibernating animals. And most of the time, the reasons that are given for why hibernating bats and turtles live so long is that for half their lives they're either hibernating or they're just in very cold waters and have switched off their metabolism. And he shows that that's not really the reason. They share many, many features that we see with the naked mole rat in terms of the way they handle different molecular pathways and how sensitive they are to certain pathways which seem to be very protective. So what's been very interesting to me from a comparative perspective is that there seem to be many hundreds of organisms that have evolved the same mechanisms of protection to lead to much longer lifespans. And so if we can try and integrate all that information and synthesize it, we might have other clues to start pursuing in the interventions, testing programs, and the likes thereof, which we have at the Barshop Institute.
So how do, about healing, like healing from traumatic injury, does the naked mole rat, how quickly does it heal compared to, say, a mouse?
Well, that's one of the intriguing findings that we find. The mole rat doesn't seem to heal very fast, but it heals very well. So it takes much longer to make sure that the cells have completely sealed, but they don't seem to form scar tissue or any remnants that there was a problem before. And I think that's part of the trick. If a situation for the mole rat feels suboptimal, even if it's a very mild stress, the cells immediately stop dividing and sit it out and wait until conditions are better before they start replicating again. In contrast, in a situation where most mouse cells in cell culture have died, the few that have remained are proliferating as normal, as though there was nothing wrong, and yet they're proliferating now with mutations and damage and are not repairing their cells as well. So at the cellular level, it seems that the naked mole rat really does protect and repair its cells beautifully, but it takes a long time to heal.
And does the naked mole, they're from in Africa, like what, Somalia, around there?
Correct. They're found in Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya, the Horn of Africa.
And do they have natural predators?
The only predators that can enter their burrow system are snakes or spoonballed abysses when they're actually at the surface pushing out soil. But for the most time, they're protected from both climatic extremes, germs, and predators.
And then they're protected from the sun's rays.
Absolutely.
Which is, we hear about how that could, mess with your DNA.
Well, that's been an interesting study that we've been following in the lab recently, because the one thing we thought they have never had experience dealing with is UV light. They probably encountered arsenic in soil and heavy metals in soil, because that's where you find those kind of things. But I have a student, Caitlin Lewis, who's been UV radiating mice, sunbathing the mice weekly for the last 3 months, trying to give them skin cancer.
Melanoma.
And they're not responding so far.
Well, I mean, they're not getting the melanoma.
They're not showing
any. But they're loving it.
They probably are loving it. They love the warmth and the heat of it, but they certainly are not doing what mice do at that same kind of situation.
But it's just interesting to me that, we're looking at the comparisons, we're able to identify them, but then we're trying to isolate and tease out the information which can be actionable to try and help people. And that seems to be the hard part of your job, right?
Well, I think first you get the basics and understand what are the topics you want to look for. And now I think we really are homing in on the key molecular pathways that are important. And certainly from the work we've done, we've isolated three or four compounds that are likely, or three or four pathways, I should say, not compounds, that are likely to play a very important role in healthy aging. And there are potential drugs that can be used to take this further. So I think we're on path to do just that.
And that sounds exciting. It's interesting. Everyone wants to live longer. You know, they probably, when they hear what you do and what you study, they have some dumb thing that they like, oh, yeah, you must be what they may say something silly all the time. But they want to live longer and they want you to hurry up with your job. So is there anything coming in the path right now that would be, I know we've talked about rapamycin in the past. Are there things in the pathway in the tubes that could help us now?
Well, I think there's quite a lot to be said from the kind of diet you eat. One of the key pathways that we've identified is a pathway that you could activate by eating a diet high in broccoli, high in cruciferous vegetables and the likes thereof. And that might be a good place to start. So there are things out there that you can start sort of teasing your own physiology as though it were having the same kind of stress response. But we're not there yet. We've got a little way to go, but I think we're on target to get there.
So, Jim Nelson, you were saying that there are people who are doing caloric restriction on their own now, and they've been doing it for a while. Are y'all tracking any evidence that this is helpful?
Well, the National Institute of Aging has sponsored research which has been directed towards studying some of these people. And indeed, they do show signs of, better functioning physiology. For example, one thing that happens with the aging heart is its performance wanes. This is totally independent from heart disease, as we think of it, hardening of the arteries and things like that. The muscle function actually becomes impaired. The electrical activity becomes impaired. And I was struck by some of the research that showed that these people seem to have better functioning hearts in this respect compared to people who are not calorically restricted.
So these self-imposed caloric restriction types, are they part of an ongoing study? They get examined by you? How does that work?
We're not involved at the Bar Shop in those particular studies, but the Bar Shop is engaged in looking at other factors that may influence, for example, this terrible problem of aging called frailty, where an individual is old but can't even open the screen door that's hinged, for example.
They've lost muscle mass, they have no flexibility, they don't have any strength, they brittle bones, all those things.
Exactly. One of the things I wanted to mention, you were asking about interventions. One of the easiest interventions that seems to be holding up very well is walking. People have found in both animal models and now directly in prospective studies looking at humans that people who walk regularly age far better and have this healthier aging. So that's a very promising thing, and that's one of the things that's going to be talked about by scientists at this meeting.
Like the benefits of walking?
The benefits of exercise, yes.
Of exercise. And walking, you know, if you're running, it's hard on the body, but walking is a good thing.
Walking is probably much better than running in the long term, yes.
Now, also at this conference, you're going to be looking at the economic and public policy consequences of our increased longevity. And so are you just looking at the longevity that we're experiencing now through a society by as we're aging, or because that has a lot to do with, you know, where public dollars need to be going and how we're going to be looking at that? Rochelle?
No, I think it's more than that. I think we're looking at the consequences of having a population of healthy 90-year-olds or
trying
centenarians
to get there.
And the benefits that probably have to our society in terms of lower medical costs and the likes thereof. It also has to have a component that goes with the retirement age and the economic consequences of forcing people to retire at ages when they're still very productive, or maybe more productive than our generation currently are.
So we're always talking about, well, you know, 40 is a new 20 and 60 is a new 50 or whatever. So, like, if your research gets realized and you see some big breakthrough, how long do you think a person would be able to live healthy?
I honestly don't know what the answer to that question is going to be. We know that the maximum human lifespan is about 122 years. And if we can make it so that most people become healthy centenarians, I think we would have achieved our goal.
Okay, and so if people want to go to the event, there's something open to the public tomorrow night?
Yes, Friday night from 6:30 until 9, we have a panel on healthier lifespan and societal and economical implications.
All right. And this is the annual meeting of American Aging Association. It's at the Westin Riverwalk Hotel. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.